Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Well, hi there, folks, and welcome back to another edition of Ancient Future Faith. I am Chris Alford. I'm the blessed guy who gets to be the pastor of Epiclesis, an Ancient Future Faith Christian church in Sacramento, California. As always, I love to send people over to the website so you can learn more about Epiclesis. You can learn even, my goodness, what in the world an Epiclesis is. And you can find information there at epiclesis.org. That's E-P-I-C-L-E-S-I-S.org. I love to bring you all kinds of interesting guests and folks who come across my path. And somebody is actually in the studio today. And our paths have crossed many, many times over the years. I'm so blessed to introduce you to my friend, Susan McQuarrie. Susan, welcome and thanks for being here.
Thank you, Chris. It's a joy to be here and be with you and get to see you again.
It's been a long time.
Long, yes.
Susan, you're in town to speak to Epiclesis. You're one of three missional support partners that we have.
And yes.
I've been really hankering for folks to get to know you. And we're going to talk all about you and what you do missionally here in just half a jiffy. But I thought it might be interesting just to, I don't know, give people a little background anyway on how our paths first cross.
Yes.
It was many, many years ago. We were talking about this the other day. We were blessed to grow up in a pretty remarkably unusual, truly unique church. So talk just a little bit about how in the world we came to know each other years ago.
We did. We both of our families were a part of a really vibrant, growing church and with so much impact on the lives of the young people that came through there.
Yeah.
Everything from teachers, pastors, the worship, the music, the youth involvement. We just had multiple opportunities to have our lives spoken into and to be directed so well in teaching and faith.
I was thinking about all the remarkable people who have gone through that church. And just in our little cadre of friends, there have been all kinds of folks who've gone on to do really remarkable things. I mean, not necessarily even in kingdom work, but gosh, making a huge impact.
Absolutely.
We went to the same preschool, didn't we?
We did. That's a long time ago.
I know, because we're like in our 30s now.
And I'm going to take that one and run with it.
Actually, it's been 30 years since I have seen you and your husband, Larry, face to face.
True.
We should tell folks that you come from a wonderful family, a musical family, a sharp, smart, interesting, fun family. And we're both blessed to have great families. And in those years of growing up at Central Baptist Church in Knoxville, Tennessee, gosh, we were in chapel choir together and Sunday school and training union and all kinds of stuff like that.
That's right. All the fun.
Did you, even in those early years, did you have any reckoning that you were going to do, like you were going to work for God? I didn't. And that's the reason I ask. In fact, some of my friends and I used to kind of giggle a little bit about how everybody was always coming back from, I don't know, choir tour or something and feeling extra emotional and saying, I've decided to give my life to Jesus and be a missionary or whatever. We always thought that was kind of silly. We thought, that'll never be me. Did you wonder about that ever?
That's a great question. I think I always felt that God had something special for me to do, but I never knew what. Hmm. So I couldn't pinpoint it to missions or ministry. I didn't know what it might be, but I do remember sensing that God has great plans for each of us and wanting and wondering what that might be and definitely being impacted by just being a part of a strong spiritual community and watching others and how they answer a call. And so I know that that had a huge impact on me, but I do remember anticipating what it might be.
We were in church together. We grew up together. We did chapel choir. We went to the same high school. And then everybody goes their separate ways. We're off to college. A few years later, you and your husband are at Southwestern Seminary, right?
Correct.
Fort Worth.
Yes.
And I was thinking about doing a doctoral degree there and showed up just to kind of get a lay of the land. Stayed with you guys in your apartment, I think,
yes.
if I'm not mistaken. And then that's the last time you and I have seen each other in years and years and years.
Exactly.
So give us the grand tour of you and your husband are off at seminary. Mm-hmm. You're getting a really good, in fact, I don't remember what the degree was, but talk about what's happened to you since and how in the world did you end up in Madrid, Spain?
Oh, wow. There's a lot of years in there.
I know. And go. So,
and go. In a nutshell, Larry and I just began our journey. I can't think of a better word for what our lives have been these past 36 years of following the Lord, being obedient, and just joining Him where He's calling us, where He's at work. So that's taken us through church planting in North America and then making a decision to go overseas as a young family in 2001, and we have pretty much been overseas since that time. It took us to Spain. We've been in Germany and have had some stints back in the U.S. for different ministry leadership opportunities. Yet in 2018, returned once again to Madrid because we love Madrid, we love Spain, we love the people and the culture, and that's where we felt called once again. So,
well, let's break that down a little bit if we can. You didn't go overseas right away, so you finish up at Southwestern, and Larry is a pastor, right? I mean, you did church planting.
Correct. Well, we started out with him being one of the ministers in a church in Tennessee, and then went to...
Where was that?
We were in Chattanooga at Red Bank, and we went to a international missions conference there in the city, and that's where we both really felt the nudge of looking into missions as a part of our ministry. And that just catapulted us into the church planting years and then moving overseas.
Now, where was the church planting done?
That was done in Texas, in Georgia, in Tennessee, and finished off in Atlanta before we headed overseas.
What did you do exactly? Did you go personally and plant each of those churches, or what was that ministry like?
Yeah, so Larry has a real visionary missional heart and would be able to come up with the conception of what a church might mean for a certain community and what the need was. And he has a great way of mapping a city and a community to see, is there a need there? And then really it's a team. Church planting is a team effort as we brought people alongside to do it together. And that's what I love. I love the community of any ministry. And so we just had fun. We had a lot of fun.
That was several churches then you planted.
It was.
Are those churches still ongoing?
Yeah, some of them are and some of them aren't. Some of them have changed and joined others. Mm-hmm. Some of them are still independent and growing and going, which is the normal pattern of churches and communities. As they grow and change, they might move. They might branch off into separate groups. They may do different things. So it's been fun to watch, just like you watch a child grow up.
Sure.
Watch a church grow and change and be what God intends for
them. And have
them.
Different personalities.
Right,
and,
you know. Right.
Were each of those in a Baptist context?
Yes, they were. Yeah.
And is that because you're sending organization then? Or,
correct.
Okay,
yes.
Gotcha. Now, at some point, you guys, well, how did that go? How did that transition go or calling go? And you switched to, for lack of a better word, foreign missions. You're going to do international missions. How did that change come about?
Interestingly, I was on a short-term mission trip serving in South America, and while I was gone, my husband was caring for our two small children, and he was mowing the lawn, and he just really felt like, you know what, this isn't where we're going to be staying forever. God has something else for us, and through prayer and seeking God's will, he really felt like overseas was where we were headed.
Now, okay. God talks to me sometimes in the shower, so with Larry,
mowing the lawn, it's yard work, yes.
And so he's feeling this real tug.
He did. And so when I got home from my trip, he was telling me about it.
And you immediately said, great, let's go. Is that what you said immediately?
I absolutely didn't. I said, well, I don't know. Well, actually, I said no, I think.
Let's talk about it.
I think I said, I'll pray about praying about it even. I just don't know about this.
I love that phrase, by the way.
Yeah.
I'll pray about praying about it.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes you ask people in church, hey, we really need some help with the, you know, setup crew or whatever. Well, you know, I'm willing to pray on that. But in this case, he's asking you to make a humongous life
change. It's a big decision. And he knew that. And I mean, I think it's good to be willing to sit with these, you know, big decisions.
Sure.
And there can be moments where it's instantaneous, but there can also be such value in stepping towards the wrestling through, what does this mean? Because it is a huge life decision. And so that's what we did. We spent a good bit of the next year really talking through it and me really coming to terms with my fear about the unknown and seeking clarity from the Lord when there were so many unknowns. And I found that my confidence in the Lord was what was unshakable and what was known. And so the clarity for the details, I didn't really have to rely on. And that was that was a huge step in my journey of faith.
Well, I want to just camp out there half a second because this morning in church, you were kind enough to worship with us and share about your ministry at church. And one of the phrases that really caught my attention was something to the effect of, and I'll let you expound because I won't get it exactly right. You said something to the effect of, hey, you know, I didn't know all the details, but God really showed me I'm the one that you can have confidence in. What was that phrase that you shared with us this morning? And just flesh that out a little bit, because that's a huge discipleship nugget there for folks to latch onto and be inspired by. I was, by the way.
It really is. And it came from one of the spiritual directors within my organization, Teach Beyond, who talked about clarity and confidence in calling and how we can be high on our confidence in the Lord and what he's doing without, even if we don't have the clarity for those details. And that was so assuring for me to learn that and to think of my calling in that regard. It just brings an assurance that he's with us as he says he is, and that we can rest in that even when we don't have all the details.
Wow, beautifully said. Folks, you're listening to an interview with my buddy and a wonderful friend and partner in missional efforts. Her name is Susan McCrary. She's in town to talk to Epiclesis about the work that she's doing. We joyfully support her in a small way in her mission and in her work. She lives with husband Larry in Madrid, although you guys are stateside for a little bit right now, and we were blessed to have you come our way. You're now at the point in the story where you are getting ready to go to Madrid. Madrid 1.0, you went 1. Back and 0. Forth several times.
We did.
So that first trip to Madrid, talk a little bit about that, would you? You get your kids in tow and off you go.
Oh, that's right. Well, you know, the plane lands, you gather your luggage, you go to the first hotel. When I say first, I mean because there may be multiple temporary places until you land on an apartment where you'll live. Mm. And that's just the nature of an overseas move, where there's just a lot going on right there in those first days. And I can remember the overwhelmed feeling, excitement too, for what this new adventure that we're on. And really,
but also surely, oh my gosh, what have we done? Is there some of that?
There's always moments of that.
I'm sure.
I think I kind of have those every day anyway. But yes, so we step into how do we adjust? How do we adapt here? And man, we learned so much in those first weeks, months, years, even the first days that we look back on and are so thankful that there was much learning to be had. And I can say that one of the most important things in making an overseas transition is to be a learner, because we think as adults, we've got it figured out. We're ready to go. And there's a whole lot ahead of us to learn.
We should pause to say, so we're at 2001 now,
yes.
Right? Okay, two thoughts I wanted you to share a little bit more about. One of them is you are headed out like the day before 9/11, something like that.
Right.
I want you to share a little bit about that story. And also, hindsight is everything, right? Always 2020. And you and Larry have written a wonderful book, and I want you to mention that,
sure.
That goes back and says, gosh, it would have been really great if we had known XYZ 123 before we headed out. And that may be helpful to some folks who are listening to this right now and are contemplating this kind of thing.
Absolutely.
So can you hit on both of those things before we get to the tasks that you had in Madrid 1.0?
Yes. And I think that that applies so well to just continuing to learn, stepping towards learning and growth in our faith. But when I was wrestling with whether we were going to go overseas, I was dealing with some fear about the unknown. And I think a lot of it honestly has to do with control, just to be honest and vulnerable with it. Like, what happens when we're not in control and what that feels like? And so,
and by the way, sorry, it just occurs to me that affects women and men typically. I'm speaking with a broad brush here, but that issue of control is an important one for both men and women, but it affects us differently, doesn't it?
Yeah, it may show up in different ways for us, for sure.
And but it's still there.
And
men want to have, you know, I know I've got this under control and I've got all the parameters. And women also have a desire to control in some ways, but it shows up in different ways. Did you all have to wrestle through some of that as a couple, I'm going to guess?
Maybe somewhat. Mm-hmm. I think that everyone has their comfort zone. I think it kind of falls within, how willing are we to be vulnerable and take risks?
Mm-hmm. And you got your babies there.
Right.
So there's a lot of mama stuff.
There's some mama stuff going on.
And being out of control. With,
right. And so.
Well, I interrupted you, but we're at September 10th.
We went to training and the next day was the 9/11 tragedy. And so guess what rose up again for me were these feelings of being out of control and having some fear. And how do I work through that? Again, really lessons in how to trust the Lord. These were opportunities for me to learn to lean on Him in so many ways. And so I'm thankful for that, even though it was quite a unsettling time. But we learned much through that, and I'm grateful for the lessons that I learned in who God is and how sovereign He is and His care over us. And so we ended up being delayed a little bit for a visa, waiting on a visa, but then we're able to go and started our journey. And then, you know, to answer your second part.
Well, let me ask you one more quick thing about that. Did you find that 9/11 had a way of making folks open to you as an American? Or my sense was from friends overseas that they were very tenderhearted toward us at that particular time. Mm. They were horrified by what had happened. Did you find any of that?
I think that tragedy with human lives has the ability to bring people together because of compassion and sympathy for the other. Suffering is common to everyone. Mm-hmm. And so to see another human suffer is something that draws our heart toward the person, if we're willing to let it. And so we did feel compassion from others overseas through that tragedy. Mm. And so I think that's so beautiful to see the human capacity for comforting others.
Having a shared thing, even an awful thing in common, is Absolutely. An entree into relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well said.
We don't often know as evangelicals, even to this day and after 9/11, how to lament. That's one of the things I think we have a deficit in evangelical world. I remember after 9/11, so many worship leader types and pastors were calling around the country saying, what do we do? Hey, what are you all doing? We got people flocking to church. We got people who recognize a need for God, but we don't have a language or vocabulary with which to share that. And it just occurs to me that folks like you guys in far-flung places doing missional work had a beautiful opportunity in some ways to have something in common with folks.
That's right. Yeah. And lament, so powerful and so important and needed. I'm making a mental note to come back to you later on that to hear from you, because I know that this is your heart is worship and that you have much to speak into that for. So I look forward to hearing more about that, because it is so important.
Now, fast forward, you guys write a book some years later about all the 827 things I wished we had known.
We narrowed it down to 30.
Well, I'd like to hear the top three or two or three. What were some of the ones that you thought, oh boy, this would have really been handy to know ahead of time? I'm sure there were practical things, but also, I don't know, metaphysical things as well.
Yeah, that was a fun book to put together.
What's the title, by the way, and how can folks find it?
That book is First 30 Days, and we spell it D-A-Z-E as a play on words from D-A-Y-S, because the first 30 days in a new place, you are in a daze a bit. And so we wrote a book that intended to just give advice and help people find the simple ways to be intentional and not be overwhelmed, but to step towards learning your new culture and falling in love with it. And so the book came about 7 years ago. My husband is a co-founder and the leader of an organization, the Upstream Collective. And so they had started about 15 years ago. And so we published the book through Upstream Collective. And so it can be found on their website, but also on Amazon. And we just were sitting on a park bench in Madrid, thinking of all the things we were grateful that we had learned in our time overseas. And we thought about, what if these little pieces of advice that we had received from others, what if these little nuggets that we have, could we share them? Could we share them with others and hopefully help someone else to adjust well and to enter a new culture well and to be intentional in that? And so we began to jot down our ideas and narrowed it down to about 30 and realized, wow, this would be fun for people maybe to take one a day and step in it. Now, these are very simple, simple ways to engage well with the culture around you. And one of my favorites even is the chapter called Smile, which I know sounds just so minor, yet it's not.
No, it's a big deal, isn't it?
It is a big deal because our nonverbals are the first way that we enter into any social situation. And so we want you to feel like it's the small ways that matter too. We speak about humility. We speak about having fun. Sometimes we take ourselves so seriously and our lives and our work so seriously that we forget to just enjoy the world and the people around us.
And lest people think that this is a book for missionaries, I love the subtitle. It says Practical Encouragement for Living Abroad Intentionally. So,
yes. You
know what? I bet somebody who's even going on a vacation abroad, in fact, I wish they would. How many times Americans get this horrible, perhaps well-earned reputation for being just awful when they go on vacation.
You know what? I'm thinking we should have a travel version. Don't you?
Yes, I do.
Okay. You can help write it.
I would love to. You helped
with the idea, so you'll need to help us.
The subtitle of this book, folks, is Practical Encouragement for Living Abroad Intentionally. I'm looking at it on Amazon right now. It's $9.99. Get yours right away. But you've got to talk to Larry about doing one for people who are, because even when you're going on vacation, you don't need to be a sourpuss, and you need to represent not only our country, but most importantly, the kingdom well when you go abroad. So there's your new.
Well, it'll have to be the first 30 minutes, I guess, because nobody has a 30-day vacation, I guess.
The first 3 hours,
I don't know. The first 3 hours. Yeah, I mean, there's truth in that for sure. But so we wrote this book and try to pass along little tidbits.
What was your work in Madrid in this first, because I know you left and returned and left and returned, half a dozen or something? It wasn't
we
that
did.
Many.
It was
Madrid 1.0, what were you doing there then?
We were involved with some missional efforts towards church planting, and then we began to work with different people groups around the city, leading different teams. So it was just a lot of fun. It's a great city. It's a big city and a lot of opportunity for reaching out with love to those around us.
Now, your mission changed, your focus changed. God always does that, doesn't he? He has all kinds of other things for us to do. As we make the turn now to talk about what you're doing right now with Teach Beyond, I want you to talk about that little experience you had where you were introduced to them even some years before. But first, let me remind folks that they're listening to an interview with Susan McCrary. She's a friend. She and her husband, Larry, are doing all kinds of wonderful missional work in Europe. Their base of operations is Madrid. And she's in Sacramento right now to talk to our church, Epiclesis, about this wonderful work she's doing with an organization called Teach Beyond. We're going to talk about that next. Susan, before you even were working for them, you were a big fan of theirs. Can you talk about how that introduction came about? And then we're going to dig into what in the world Teach Beyond does and what you do with them.
We had moved to Condren, Germany, and were working there in mobilization. And my
Wait a minute. What does that mean?
Mobilization is where we're connecting what's happening on the field with partners in our churches and fellowships and groups.
So this is still under the auspices of the International Mission Board.
Correct.
Okay. And you end up in Germany for a while.
We do. And we were there in Germany, and my children were attending the Black Forest Academy.
Sounds like a James Bond super spy. The Black Forest Academy. It sounds very, very...
It's a beautiful name, isn't it? Yes,
but it's a school, right?
It's a school, but it's also in the Black Forest. So
they weren't learning spycraft. They were learning algebra.
Correct. Right, okay. They might have preferred some spycraft to algebra, but it's situated right there, nestled in the forest. It's beautiful. But my children were attending the school, and I was learning about the school, the staff, and hearing about their ministry, their vision. And it was just such a beautiful thing to see this organization that cares not only about the student's education, but about the student themselves and about their family and about their well-being. And for the first time, I really saw how education is a ministry. Mm. And they really impacted my family's life in a beautiful and a personal way, really caring for us in that season and caring for my kids and for
Which
Larry
must have
and
been
I.
huge.
It really is huge. And I saw the beautiful way in which they express care, even, you know, within a classroom setting. And so I fell in love with that ministry and their vision and their purpose at that point. And lo and behold, 16 years later, well, 14, because I've been with them for two now, I received an opportunity to be a part, to be a member with them. And I am just thrilled because now I'm able to serve alongside and pour into these members who have done that for me and my family.
So we should say that the Black Forest Academy was the very first school that Teach Beyond put together. Am I getting that part of
That's
the story right?
Okay. It is the first school that they had opened, their first project.
And Teach Beyond is a Canadian ministry, but they set up this school for missionary kids in the Black Forest, right?
Right. It's an international faith-based school and has a boarding program in the high school. And yes, Teach Beyond had come out of a family out of Canada and had started as a Jan's team and then switched to education later on and became Teach Beyond. And that's when I got to know them.
And then eventually, before you left Germany to go to Madrid 2.0, or was it 3.0 at this point?
Might be. Two. I think we're on two.
You taught for the academy, did you not?
I did.
Because you're a teacher by training.
Right. I did. I had the opportunity to teach in the school, which I absolutely loved. You know, when you're a teacher, entering back into the classroom is such a joy. And these children were just so precious to get to know.
What grade did you teach?
I was in the high school.
In what topic?
I was teaching Spanish and then did some educational therapy as well.
You end up going back to Madrid. And are the kids grown at this point when you go back?
So we had returned to the U.S. for a couple of years a role there that we were doing.
Again, under the auspices of the International Mission Board.
Right.
Gotcha.
And so our daughter was in college and our son was headed to college. And that's when we had come back to Madrid at that point. So
you returned to Madrid.
We did. We were there for several years, able to serve in Europe in a leadership role. And then we made a move, a big leap of faith for Larry to lead the Upstream Collective full time. Mm-hmm. And we moved to Louisville, Kentucky, and were able to be a part there of a church. And I was able to use my ESL training to teach immigrants and refugees in Louisville, and which is also my heart. I loved teaching overseas, but I also love teaching in the ESL classroom, as it is such a cross-cultural, rich, and diverse group of adults.
Then comes Madrid 3.0.
Now we're heading towards Madrid 3.0.
You go back to Madrid. Why did you go back? So, I know the answer, but I I want people to hear your heart about that.
In a nutshell, the Lord took us back there.
There you go.
That's what he had for us. And we didn't know that we'd be returning, and we had the opportunity to return.
And was that also at that point under the auspices of the International Mission Board?
So Larry was leading the Upstream Collective at that time.
I see.
And then I was serving in the IMB as educational consultant.
Okay. That association comes to an end. The contract comes to an end.
Yes.
And you guys don't want to leave. Your work is not done.
That's right.
And how and when did this wonderful connection with Teach Beyond come back around again, even after so many years?
Teach Beyond had always been on my heart, and I had always been telling people about Teach Beyond. So it just was something that I was passionate about. And so when I was looking for what my next ministry endeavor would be, I thought of Teach Beyond. I thought, oh, I wonder if there's an opportunity for me there. And so I contacted them and found an opportunity in member care. And so my ministry was beginning to shift, but in a way that I felt like was a natural fit, because I had been serving families, serving students in the school there mm-hmm. in Germany, mm-hmm. and helping families overseas to adjust, and now I was going to have an opportunity to be a part of teachers' lives, and that thrilled me.
By the way, I was thinking today when you were talking at church, what a natural fit indeed. This is just seems like a tailor-made job for you and a calling for you. It's nifty how the Lord worked all that mm-hmm. out. I'd like for you to take a few moments to sketch out in the broadest possible terms mm-hmm. what in the world Teach Beyond is. It's an international network.
Right.
Tell us what it is, what they do, and then just share a little bit about what it is you do, because I'm getting the picture that it's really critical.
Well, Teach Beyond believes that as followers of Jesus, that we are a global community who reaches out through transformative education in order to help people be all that God intends for them to be. And so to see lives transformed and to be able to use the vehicle of education, which is transformative in and of itself, to allow God to speak into the lives of students, of families, of communities, as we share his love with them.
Does Teach Beyond plant schools? Do they come alongside already existing schools?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
Their projects are in a variety of ways around the globe. And so the opportunity to step into existing schools and partner with them, as well as being a part of starting up projects and being involved globally through camps, informal education, working with refugees and displaced peoples, as well as in areas that are less fortunate, don't have educational programs in place.
Well, I wanted to pick your brains about that a minute, because you said today that there, I mean, it's hard for us when we think school, we're thinking desks and chalk and, well, I guess that shows my age, whiteboards and books and bells, and we're going to go to gym now it's time to, you know, go to.
Right.
Whatever.
And so, that's such a traditional model, isn't it? It's
yeah.
how we were raised.
And you're saying Teach Beyond can also be found in the middle of, frankly, squalor and deprivation, and they're doing school out of a backpack. Could you talk a little bit about some of the work in refugees and or terribly impoverished places?
Well, they find where the need is, and they're able to go in and bring an educational, simple educational program in order to train teachers right where they are and to help them set up a simple class setting. And so it might look differently.
Where.
It might look differently than right. what we consider a
sure.
traditional classroom. But isn't that the beauty of education?
I appreciate that about the organization. Mm-hmm. It's not about, here we are, we've come to save the day. But you're coming along beside people who are already there, who
right.
perhaps need some encouragement, if not also instruction or a little pedagogy or whatever themselves. But it's not about you coming in and saying, you know, we've got it all figured out. Rather, we're going to work with folks who are already there on the ground.
Right.
And so some of the, I interrupted your train of thought, some places where, I mean, I understand that you're working with folks in refugee camps, in very, very impoverished places.
Right. As well as doing some English camps in certain parts of the world, being involved even in higher education through seminaries and universities, providing different types of educational programs and in a variety of ways.
I'm reading in some of the material that you gave me that the mission is to provide transformational educational services as part of God's ongoing mission to transform individuals and communities into all he intends. As yes. I'm walking through some of this material, I see that there are a number of related and ancillary ministries that you're working with, and then it's page after page of those, but then I'm looking at how many members and programs and so on you have across the globe. It's huge. It's all across the globe.
It really is. We're in over 65 countries at this point, and so it's beautiful to see the variety and the people that God brings together for his transformative work in people's lives.
So as we head toward wrapping up our conversation, yes. I want people to know what it is that you do. You said you get that a lot. What's your day like? Your title and what it is you do. I can't imagine, by the way, you must have boundless energy, but your job is huge. Could you talk a little bit about the nuts and bolts of what you do?
Yes, I've been called to be the Europe Member Care Coordinator for Teach Beyond. And so I have the privilege of finding ways to help the members in Europe to thrive while they're serving where God has placed them. And that can look like having phone calls, being a part of some meetings where people are able to be trained for what they need. I'm able to find resources that would be helpful. Care can look a million different ways
right.
for how we care for people, but making sure they're getting what they need, which means listening to what their needs are and trying to find the best way to help them thrive where they are.
When you say members, do you mean necessarily teachers?
They could be teachers, but they also can be in other roles. So while Teach Beyond is an educational, missional organization, there are opportunities even for people who are not teachers to be serving in these programs and projects. When you think about a school, you think of all the different staff members that are in a school. And so coaches
gotcha.
And medical staff, administration,
right.
leadership, curriculum development. There are a lot of ways to contribute.
So you're talking to those folks on a daily basis. Hey, do you have what you need? How can I encourage you? That
right.
kind of thing.
Yes.
But you said you also are visiting two or three schools every
yes.
semester, right?
I do, and I love that part.
So you're buzzing all around Europe, yeah?
Well, I don't know about buzzing. I'm probably dragging that suitcase in and out of airports more than buzzing. But yes, I do. And I find that to be one of the greatest joys is to meet people face to face, to get to see the different projects, to see what they're doing, because that gives me the firsthand view of what their lives are like. So then I'm better informed, better equipped and prepared to say, okay, I've seen the needs. I've seen how they flourish, and what is a challenge, and how can I help?
This morning at church, after you shared, there were a number of people who said, man, this really is ringing a bell with me. You know, we have mm-hmm. a number of teachers and or homeschool co-op types in our church, and a lot of folks involved in and around education. And several of them said, I got to get involved. I got to do something. Do you need people?
Yes. Oh, I love that.
What do you need people to do?
Well, I can't speak for the whole organization, but I can certainly say if you contact teachbeyond.org, you can look on their website for opportunities to go. You can contact them through email or message to say, I'd love to talk. I'd love to have a conversation, because I can't possibly know every single opportunity, but we have people that do know and they can talk with you about it. But yes, we do need people, and we love to see people who have a heart for doing something and don't know quite yet what that is mm-hmm. to find their place.
Would there be short-term opportunities
there
for people?
There are short-term as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. So I think when you inquire, it's going to open up the door to opportunity.
Oh.
So stepping towards making that first contact. So please reach out.
So we want to give people the opportunity to figure out how to get in touch with folks at Teach Beyond. We're going to give you the link for the website for Teach Beyond. If you are interested in hearing more about what Susan is doing and how and if there might be opportunities to help there, please give us a call or an email at Epiclesis. That would be info@epiclesis.org, and I'll do my best to try to help make those connections happen. I have one final question for you.
Okay.
In the book that you wrote, The First 30 Days, I'm dying to know, as I'm hearing you talk, I can't imagine how busy you and Larry must be. You both, you're going in 17 different directions. Do you all ever see each other? And did you include, in your book, take time to hang out with your spouse? Are you taking care of you, Susan, is what I want to know.
Oh, that's a great question. I need to always take my own advice. When I care for others, I should be caring for myself yes. as well, and my spouse, for sure. That's a great question, because there is intentionality in how we step towards caring for ourselves. There's intentionality with how we care for our spouse and our families and our children. And so it takes effort and energy. And so if we expend it all on other things, even good and noble things such as ministry, we will come up with our tanks less than full yeah. and we'll possibly suffer needlessly with running out of energy and the ability to do what God's called us to do. So care is so important. Nurturing our relationship and our marriage with our children, nurturing our relationship with the Lord. We can be doing things for the Lord and not be with the Lord.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And
so that is
one of the big pitfalls of working for the kingdom.
Absolutely. Mm. So yes, that's so important.
We talk a lot on this program at Epiclesis about ancient future faith. What in the world is ancient future faith? And I think I'd like for you to end with something you said this morning that I think tied that together for me with what you were doing and how this is an ancient future thing that you are doing. And you said that you wanted people to think about when Jesus meets with folks. Mm. And could you just spend half a jiffy talking about that? And let's be quick to remember that you and your work and the folks you are serving are the face of Jesus around the world in such an important place. And to bring Jesus right into these encounters is a beautiful example, I think, of ancient future faith in right. your neck of the woods. So would you just close us out with sure. that little admonition?
Yes. Well, Jesus modeled for us, his followers, how to see people, how to love them well. We can step into his steps and his example by seeing them with his love, with his eyes. And so many examples in scripture for how he saw people. Mm. I can think of many stories, but if you can even just think of one, think of how he saw the people around him, how he interacted, how he engaged, how he valued them, and how they could feel his love. And we carry with us that same command and commission to love others, love them well, and love them with his love. And that's our part in his transformative work.
Folks, my very special guest today has been Susan McCreary. She's, I'm proud to say, my friend, longtime friend, and doing some very important work out there for the kingdom. And Susan, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you, Chris. It's been just such a joy to be here with you and to visit and attend Epiclesis this morning. Was really just so heartwarming to be so welcome and embraced by the people there. So thank you.
Warms my heart to hear it. Folks, until we gather for another edition of Ancient Future Faith, I want you to be thinking about this. Would you really ponder it? Surely the road to our Christian future does run through our ancient Christian past. Until next time, the Lord be with you.